Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. My name is Irvin Nugent, and as always, I am joined by my friend and co-host and collaborator, Bridget Tyre. Bridget, how are you doing today?
Well, thank you for asking, Irvin. I'm doing great. We are recording this on January 20th, and it is quite chilly.
Yep.
Snow is everywhere. I'm looking out my office window and seeing this winter wonderland, which I have to admit is pretty, but I hate winter. So I reluctantly say it's pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a delight to be here with you today to talk about, well, you tell our listeners, what are we going to
So today's topic is profiles in courage. And it's something I find fascinating because I think one of the tenets of a leader and one of the things they need is courage. And it really is a key to leadership today. We've often talked about leading today is incredibly difficult. There are so many different variables. We've talked about a VUCA world, the problem of dealing with that. And I think courage is really needed at times because, you know, we've got to lead really not knowing where the outcome's going to lead to. And so maybe as we start today, a good question is, what is courage? And, you know, the dictionary says it's this mental and moral strength to venture, preserve, and withstand danger, fear, and difficulty. You know, sometimes I love to go into the etymology of words, and I think courage is a really beautiful one, and it really gets to what it's about. It comes from the Latin, and the first part of the word is cor, C-O-R, which means the heart. And so it's a movement of the heart, and courage involves the heart, and it's to advance something that we hold dear and we're really passionate about, and we're willing to take a stand because of that passion. And so as we outline this, Bridget, I'm curious, you know, what might courage look like? What does courage look like in leadership, and how might we know it when we see it?
Yeah, it's a really good question because I think when we hear the word courage, maybe it seems larger than life. Mm. Who are we to be courageous?
Yeah.
And yet, to lead well, we have to have it. So practically speaking, I'm thinking about a few things. We have to have the courage to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? Because so much of what we do as leaders creates discomfort, either for ourselves, for others, or both. So can we be present to that discomfort? Can we tolerate it and push through when needed? So important. And it takes courage to really be present with discomfort of ourselves or others, right? Of course, it takes courage to be able to take risks when needed. And, you know, in our last episode, we talked about taking the risk of gathering feedback, either giving it or receiving it. But there's all kinds of risks we're called upon to make as leaders, you know, business risks, interpersonal risks. Risk is what brings innovation, growth, creativity, and ultimately success. We have to risk failure in the pursuit of growth. And that does involve a dose of courage, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess one other thing that came to my mind is this idea of being able to lead and display moral strength and authenticity. Mm. I don't think people necessarily realize this, but being our authentic selves takes courage, right? Yeah. Rather than trying to like imitate somebody else.
Yep.
If we are willing to let other people see who we really are as leaders, as human beings, and know us as we are, that takes some courage because maybe they won't like it.
Yeah, that's so true.
And being able to speak up about things that have a moral element to them, you know, to speak up for what is right and true. I mean, all this stuff, even taking a stand, which doesn't seem complicated, but when people push back and resist it, it becomes a little tougher.
Yeah.
So do you have the courage to hold your ground under pressure?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, those are the things that came to my mind. I'm curious, before we talk about leaders who maybe have inspired you, when you heard me say those ways in which leaders are required to have courage, did one of them stick out to you more than any others in terms of your own growth and development?
You know, I what strikes me about them and what I love about them, there's an inner and an outer. I think what we see very often is the outer. We see the leader who takes the stand. We see the leader who says something courageous. We see the leader that takes a risk. And yet that just doesn't happen by chance. It's built upon some of this real inner work that is done, that there's this conviction has a foundation, and that foundation so often is built on the inside. And I think, you know, so often we miss that. And I think, you know, real courageous decisions, there's a lot of thought. There's a lot of like, who am I? What does this mean? Et cetera. A lot of that really deep thinking. And I think we don't see that, but it's at the core, I think, of courage.
Oh, that is such a good point. I think that's why we sometimes assess ourselves as coming up as short. We see the outward behavior, but we don't know all that hard work that's gone on inside. In fact, some of the most courageous acts we will ever perform are quiet ones that only we know about, right? Yeah. Facing into our demons.
Yeah. Yeah. Ah,
anyways, okay, so you know what we're really wanting to do is show what this looks like and how this is embodied in leaders to inspire us, but also to show us the way. So who comes to mind for you?
Yeah. So like, you know, when I was thinking about this, one of the great figures of American history comes to me, first of all, is Frederick Douglass, you know, the great abolitionist. I recently heard a talk, it was a lecture honoring him, and it was from a person called Nancy Cohen, who's also written a book about Frederick Douglass. But the lecture was entitled The Courageous Leadership of Frederick Douglass. I thought it was really interesting what she chose to shine a light on. And it's actually going back to this whole thing we talked about, the inner and the moral strength and working on that. She talks about, you know, here you have this man who was born into slavery, escaped, but that also, that significant act of courage, but she talks about this inner work, this self-commitment by him to create this, you know, this inner moral and intellectual and emotional infrastructure that was needed for what was going to come, you know, and the role that he took. Because, you know, here he was someone who obviously wanted to change the world, change history, abolish this evil of slavery. And yet he spent many years, you know, building that, what she calls the inner infrastructure, which I love that, the inner infrastructure to enable him to have that conversation. She talks about, you know, can you imagine, you know, some of these conversations we have with ourselves? Who am I to do this? What is my role? And yet, you know, this ability of him to put into words, he was such an amazing orator. And this ability to put in simple words, which really convicted people to really think about where their stands were. And I remember, you know, two things that come to mind about him. One was, you know, he was a man of deep faith, deep Christian faith. Mm-hmm. And yet he was able to really question that faith about this disconnect of my belief in God and the existence of slavery and about how they cannot go together, and really challenged, you know, some of the thinking of the time that basically God ordained this, that God did not want anything to change. And he said, no, he challenged that. And, you know, to come up against a whole system of faith takes a lot of courage. And then the other one, you know, is one of his most famous speeches, which was on July 5th, 1852, was a celebration of July 4th. And he was giving a lecture on, you know, Independence Day. He stood up, you know, and in part of that speech, he said, you know, among a crowd of people, of white people. And he said to them, this 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, but I must mourn. Mm. And I said, wow, you know, how powerful in the conviction of that, and to feel, you know, listening to that. So for me, you know, these are we remember the outer, you know, these speeches, we've got the words, and we go, that's amazing. And yet, I just think of what, you know, Cohen calls, you know, this inner infrastructure that he built, this foundation that enabled him to really live a life of courage and to say what he was convicted about.
Such a beautiful example. It's good to remember that when we see or hear somebody speak or act with great courage, much work has gone on before then.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Love that.
It's like athletes or celebrities or musicians who like break through sort of suddenly, and everyone's like, how did you become so amazingly famous? And they're like, I've been at this for 20 years.
Same
thing with courage. And I think to our listeners, it's really important to remind you and to remind all of us that courage is a practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's a reminder. So one of the things I've been doing more often now of late as I work with leaders is actually, you know, asking them, you know, what is your value base? You know, what do you value? What are you passionate about? What is a non-negotiable? And I think, you know, some leaders are often surprised by that. You know, I don't think I've ever thought about that. And really that is, that's really important work.
Yeah, because if we're going to be courageous, we have to know for the sake of what am I doing this?
Yeah, absolutely.
And clearly, Frederick Douglass knew for the sake of what he was going to do the hard work to prepare to really change large systems.
Cool. So I'm curious, Bridget, who comes to mind for you when you think about courage?
Well, you know, Irvin, I am the mother of two daughters and the mother of a granddaughter.
Mm.
Somebody who has caught my attention because she is a young woman is Malala Yousafzai. I don't know if I said her last name correctly. Did I, Irvin?
Yep.
Good. So our listeners may have heard of her, but I think her story is so rich with lessons, you know, for all of us, certainly for my granddaughter. And I am trying to teach her a little bit about these profiles and courage because I see courage in her early. She's only five.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting about her at five? She's not a pleaser and she doesn't really care too much if she disappoints you. I find that really powerful. Right?
Yeah.
Anyways, Malala was born in 1997 in Pakistan, and it at that time was not easy to raise a girl in Pakistan, but her father insisted that she receive all the opportunities afforded to a boy, and he was a teacher, and actually he ran a girls' school in their village. And so because of his influence, you know, she was exposed early on to learning and knowledge, and before she could even walk, she would crawl into her father's classes, you know, to just absorb all of this. But by the time she was 10 years old, the Taliban extremists began to take control of the region in Pakistan that she lived in.
Yeah.
And, you know, they started outlawing and banning a lot of things for girls, right? They couldn't go to school anymore. They couldn't own a television, play music and dance. I mean, all these things were prohibited. And they targeted girls' education specifically. And this is crazy, but by the end of 2008, they had destroyed over 400 schools.
Mm.
It's all about control. Right.
Yeah.
So at 11, Malala decided, get this, to stand up to the Taliban.
Mm.
And she started by blogging anonymously for the BBC in early 2009. And her first BBC diary entry was entitled, I Am Afraid. Mm. And it detailed her nightmares and her fears about a full-blown war in her hometown. But the fear didn't stop her because really she was passionate about advocating for girls' rights to attend school. So this is what she did over the next few years. Her and her father both spoke out on behalf of girls' education in the media. Consequently, this made her a household name, but it also made her a target.
Yeah.
So when she was 15, on October 9th, 2012, she was on the bus returning from school with her friends. And two members of the Taliban stopped the bus and asked, who is Malala? And when they identified her, they shot her in the head. Now, you know, fortunately, she was airlifted to a military hospital in Pakistan and then I think taken to intensive care in England. So she didn't suffer, thankfully, brain damage, but did leave the left side of her face, I believe, paralyzed.
Yeah.
And to have a lot of surgeries. And then at 16, and this is where I think a lot of people got introduced to her.
Yeah.
Right? I know this is when she came to my attention. She spoke at the United Nations in New York, and she had this simple message, which I'm going to read because I want to make sure I get it right. And so here was her message. So let us wage a global struggle against illiteracy, poverty, and terrorism. And let us pick up our books and pens they are our most powerful weapons. One child, one teacher, one pen, and one book can change the world.
Wow.
And when I say that, oh, I get chills.
Yeah, totally.
The simplicity of the message.
Yeah.
And the power of it coming from, as you said, Irvin, a place of deep value, non-negotiable. Yeah. And her non-negotiable was girls can and will attend school.
Yeah.
They will be educated.
Yeah. So, and you know, what I love about that as well is just even the title of her first blog, you know, I Am Afraid.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, so often we think courage, because we're so passionate, we don't fear, we overcome the fear, and you really don't. Fear coexists with the action. It's there. There's always risk. There's always a little bit of fear, and you're stepping in that fear, but you're not letting the fear control it, but the fear is there. And I think that's for all of, no matter, you know, obviously she did something huge, but no matter what our act of courage is, there's always some fear. And it's good just to say it. Yeah, I'm afraid, but I have to do this.
Yeah. And sometimes just acknowledging to ourselves that we're afraid
is
enough to push us through. Right?
Yeah.
Well, boy, I mean, these are two inspiring examples. And yet our listeners, you know, they're not necessarily trying to change an entire nation.
Yep.
Nevertheless, they too are required to have courage. So what's a maybe every day kind of example you might
choose? You know, so I was thinking about this, you know, maybe it dovetails nicely into our last episode as well, was about feedback. And it was a client of mine. It was just an extraordinary client. It was a 360. But I don't think I've ever potentially met a client who was as tone deaf as they were and potentially unself-aware as they were.
Wow.
You know, what came out in that 360 was, you know, we've both done a lot of 360s, Bridget. And most of the time, there's some good, and there's a couple of points to grow, et cetera. And sometimes it's a little bit harsh, but I've never had a 360 that was really, really as condemning.
Wow.
You know, it just basically said, you don't listen, you don't respect the opinions of others, you're arrogant, you are abrasive. And in fact, I remember one comment said, I look at you as an example of how not to be a leader.
Oh my goodness.
And I mean, this is just, and I really struggled, like, how do I give this feedback? Because it was, whoa. And I can remember, you know, sitting down, it was an in-person meeting, and I could just see the complexion in his face changed. I could see almost anger rising and just a struggle. It was really interesting, you know, in the space of an hour, I think there was a dawning within that something had to change.
Wow.
You know, I had a few other meetings, you know, as we kind of did that, but it was the beginning of a journey. And I just think that beginning took a lot of courage because he was very successful. Sometimes, you know, you can be successful in some metrics. Now, obviously, in all the metrics, There was huge problems, but with some metrics, especially financial metrics, this person was very successful. And whatever it was, there was a slim opening and an ability to want to explore this. It began a long journey. It was not an overnight. There was a lot of struggles. There was a lot of anger came out, and that's not me, and this is not me. But just that initial decision took real courage. And I think at times, you know, it takes courage to take on board something which is, you know, just is doesn't taste nice and we'd rather reject. That takes courage.
What an example.
Because
really what was happening there is that feedback was challenging that person's identity as a successful
totally.
Person.
Yeah. Great.
But
great
you know,
insight.
We're so much bigger than our identities, our roles, you know, how we define ourselves. We're so much bigger than that.
Yeah.
Did you have the privilege of coaching him a little bit beyond that?
I stayed on for about 6 more months and you know, it was huge difference. And in fact, we did a little survey after about 6 months and people actually commented on that there was something really significant happening. And people really were, I think, shocked and also delighted by the changes.
Mm, great example. What an inspiring conversation for me to be having, Irvin, because, you know, I think about where is my courage muscle in need of some strengthening? And I think that it's around speaking up. I think using my voice and saying uncomfortable things continues to be an area to grow in. And I look at all three of these examples for strength to do that, right? So, you know, whether we are trying to influence an entire system, like a religious system or, you know, the Taliban, or whether we're just trying to lead our team or our families, courage is courage. And it is part of our backbone as leaders. And every single person listening to us right now has courage, or they wouldn't be listening to this and they wouldn't be in the roles that they're in. It's really a matter of just sort of reflecting on what is the inner work piece, like you said, that is needed for us to get ourselves to that next level where we can have the courage to say things that will displease somebody else, where we can demonstrate the courage to take an unpopular stand and be vilified for it, or at least people go, you're crazy, or, you know, or even just, I'm thinking of your client, you know, the courage to take responsibility for ourselves. Right. And focus on our own functioning and the only thing we can really change, which is ourselves. And that takes courage. And he did that. So hats off to your client. So what a great conversation. Thank you so much, Irvin.
Yeah, thank you. And hopefully, you know, for listeners that you're kind of mulling that and kind of saying, where have I seen courage in my life? Where have I seen courage in others? And how might I exercise that muscle? Thank you, as always, Bridget. Looking forward to our next conversation. And to our listeners, have a great week ahead.
Take care, everybody.
Bye now.